Right. So you can't surprise me with the surprise question.
No, I can't because the camera kept screwing up. Anyway, so I'm going to not surprise you by asking you a question, which is, when you first started designing and you first started grading and creating patterns, what was the thing that ended up surprising you the most about doing it professionally?
Yeah, it's the cost is my answer. So I was thinking about this earlier, and there are some really obvious costs to being a knitwear designer. But the costs that were obvious are actually not so much the costs that we pay, and the costs that we really pay per pattern are way more behind the scenes. I still think that compared to my first business in jewelry, in yoga jewelry, that the overhead of a collection, it's similar, but it can be a lot lower for knitting patterns, only because I was doing really high-end gemstones and stuff that the cost per piece of jewelry that I made was exorbitantly expensive. And that's kind of one of the reasons that I took the opportunity that I had to change gears and close down my jewelry business, thinking that since I didn't have to carry physical inventory, right, that like being a knitwear designer would be easier or less expensive. Obviously, always knowing that there are business expenses getting off the ground. But the more I've been in this business, I kind of thought like tech editing costs will go down, but they've gone like way up, right? And like,
it's like riding a bike. It never gets easier. You just get faster. It's like, right. It never gets cheaper. You just write more sophisticated things.
Yeah. And I think if anything, it's gotten a little more expensive, but still, like, I'm not trying to say like, don't be a knitwear designer. It costs so much money, but it costs more than people think it does. And that is the thing that is the most surprising to me. And if anyone actually understands my job when I'm talking to them, I think most people are surprised by that too. How would you answer that question? What surprised you the most in this career?
I think for me, it's that there's always room to wish you'd done something recent differently. Like, there's no one right answer. There's often nuance and different ways you could have done things. And like, sure, early on, I like knew right away, oh, like next time I would do this differently. But even still, like, there's always room to keep growing and doing things even better.
What I hear you saying is the sort of like lack of contentment with your work, right? Because we're always, I mean, I am used to that. I think that's part of being an artist. And I'm sure that our listeners who are not designers probably feel this way about your knits too. We're always learning. And because we're always learning and we're always growing, then we're always improving. And when you're looking back on something that you did last year, then you're like, oh, here are all the ways that I could improve it now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and recently I was doing some painting, right? Like on a canvas with paints. And I was like, I hate this. Like when you put the paint down, there's no undo. It's not like working in Procreate. It's not like you can frog it. Like the paint goes on the canvas and that's that. So in a lot of ways, I guess I'm glad for that flexibility in my knitting and in my pattern design. But like once that pattern goes out, it's not like you're going to go back and be like, whole new yoke. So it has some elements of both the mutability of knitting and the immutability of other forms of art.
I agree with that. I mean, in some cases, you know, that I did go back and rework a couple of things this past year, but I can't really say I like updated the pattern. I redesigned the whole concept. Yeah, because there were flaws in the original concept that meant I couldn't make them really work with my values and my system now. But yeah, it can be more valuable to just let go of a design and discontinue it than to rework it, because reworking it is really starting completely over and incurring all of the costs all over again. So there, if I could, I would be tinkering with every one of my patterns all the time, but that's not good business practice either, right? Because then nobody can really knit from it without knowing if I've been in there like messing with some numbers. You have to, the pattern that's been tested and edited has to stay as such.
Yeah. Or at a notwithstanding. Okay, so today we're talking about, we're doing just kind of a behind the scenes where we talk about some of the things that come up in the grind of design work and some of the nuts and bolts of what our processes are like, taking something from, you know, we've talked a lot about where we get our inspiration and where we source ideas, but how do you go from sketch to market or even sketch to a sample?
Yeah, I mean, one is like 6 months and one is like a year, but
yeah, plus sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes less. I know before I was a designer, I really didn't know much about this process at all. And I learn a lot from doing, so I've learned a lot. But I was always curious, and I hope that this is going to be interesting for folks that might be interested when we mention like, we're really tired, we're doing a lot. We've like mentioned those things, but we haven't really told y'all like what it is we're doing all the time. So that's, this is a sort of peek into like the life of doing this, especially Jen and I are really both full-time in our knitting businesses at this point. So it's a good time for us to share some of that with you. So we hope it's inspiring. We obviously love what we do. We're also sometimes real tired because things can be so much more complex, which is probably part of my original answer, not just expense, but the complexity of the process, right? Which is part of what makes it expensive.
I think even starting with this idea of full time, right? Like I'm full time in this as much as I'm full time in anything, but mm-hmm. I have between 4 and 8 doctor's appointments a week that for me and my kid, like full time for me is not 40 hours, 9 to 5. But I'm laughing because whether or not I include sample knitting in that, in the hours I consider work hours, like depends on the product, right? If I'm really enjoying something, I'm like, oh, I only count desk hours as time worked. And if I'm like this week I had an incident, something came up with, something a sample knitter was working on for me. She had some unforeseen circumstances. And so I've had to cram in a lot of unexpected knitting. And I'm definitely like, right, a 60-hour a week. I did all this knitting. So it depends on how we feel about it, right?
I guess. I actually might feel differently than you on that because I only ever schedule, we all know Patty, my robot assistant. She only schedules my knitting during work hours when I'm very behind. Otherwise, she schedules all my knitting during my leisure time. And so anytime that knitting is scheduled during work hours, there's like a certain amount of not enjoying it for me because I feel like I'm not on deadline or I'm like rushing more. And my ideal situation is when I am knitting something way ahead of when I would like to get it into tech and I can take my time to enjoy that process more. Yeah. But adding the stress or the rush of like needing something done quickly is what kills it for me the most.
Yeah, it makes it into like work with a capital W. Yeah. I experimented with a robot, Patty, myself. And what I took away from that was like I started thinking about my work day as being, it's work and appointment day. And mm-hmm. it's from like 10 to 4. And then it's also from 8 to 2. Right. So that's my work day. And then I also like my appointments fall in the beginning. And like you, I prefer to do my sample knitting in the evening whenever I can. And when it needs to get pushed up during the day, like I definitely know like I'm losing out on valuable desk time. But I do most of my heavy brain work, like most of my grading, most of my pattern writing and all of my sample knitting generally between the hours of 8 p.m. and 2 a.m.
I know, which I cannot do because when I tried working that way, I made so many more mistakes. That is not my brain's time to thrive. But I do wake up pretty early. I wake up naturally by like 7 most of the time if I'm very tired. Lately, I've been sleeping to like 7:30 And that's about it. That's like as sleep in as I get. So I really do most of my like thinking work in the morning, I prefer, or first thing. So the most important thing for me is always the thing that I'm doing like first with my biggest chunk of time. But also in my household, that is the time that is the most guaranteed to be quiet and workable for me.
Yeah.
But I want to rewind a little because we're talking about designing, and I think we sort of glossed over something that might be a common conception. I think the common conception is that if you are a full-time knitwear designer, that your work is mostly knitting. And it's really, really not, right? Yeah. Like, I think many of my testers, my regular testers, might knit more than I do. I definitely knit a lot. Like, I definitely spend many hours knitting a week, especially lately when I'm doing like 4 or 5 designs like right in a row right now so I can get ahead. Yeah. So compared to like an average hobbyist, I probably knit more. But the people that really love our podcast that are like really into knitting, they might be spending more time knitting than we are. And that can be true in a lot of industries when you start working in them. Like yoga teachers usually are not the people that are like in yoga classes the most, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So now that I've got these sleeves finished, I need to seam this sweater and put the collar on, and then I probably won't cast on something new for at least 3 weeks.
Right. So like what – so what are you going to be doing?
I'm just sitting here thinking, that a break? Oh, rats, does that mean I'm going to go on a trip next week without a project? I need to sit down and grade something.
Make another bra.
You know what? I'm actually knitting a sunup for Susie.
Oh, cute. Well, you'll have that then.
Moco Moco. Mm-hmm. She's like, this is so soft. So
she really wanted something in that yard. Yeah.
She did.
That's very nice. I like that for her. I literally designed the bralette pattern so that I can always throw something in my bag and have it available for knitting projects.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have two other, like, I have backup samples that I'm trying to create just for my
own. Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. That are all
I'm sure you have.
I'm studiously ignoring. Yeah.
Me too. Me too. But what are, besides the knitting stuff, what are your usual tasks? What do you think you actually spend the most time on if we don't spend the most time on our needles?
I spend a lot of time writing.
Yeah. Me too.
I spend a lot. I've spent more time writing like my newsletter and creating content that's educational. But I mean, I see myself as half designer and half like kind of like online coach or consultant.
Content or, creator.
Yeah. Slash educator.
Yeah.
Activist, that kind of thing. So a lot of the value that I think I create for people or that I try to create for people is not just patterns to get your sweaters to fit you better and to help you make your next favorite knit, but all the tools you need to make any pattern your next favorite knit. So I spend a lot of time writing and illustrating.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Also that. Yeah. I mean, it depends on the week. There are weeks that I'm spending like 4 hours multiple days a week sketching or painting to put ideas together. And I have to say that those are like some of my favorite weeks. There's a lot of writing patterns, writing copy. I also freelance and write other copy in this industry. So I count that as like my design career, even though it's a little different, but I spend a lot of time writing for other folks too. Because so much, I mean, if you're trying to make money, if you are designing professionally, then so much of your work is introducing people to your work and introducing people to your values and introducing people to your way of thinking so that they can see if they are a good fit for your patterns, right? Because there's more to a designer being the right designer for you than just the size that they offer, although that's obviously a big factor. But there are a lot of other big factors that I think it's important to give people a way to get to know us and to get to know our work. like well in advance of them investing in a whole sweater.
Well, yeah, I think that being somebody, like who you are informs your pattern writing. It informs how you grade. It informs how you write. It informs mm-hmm. what assumptions you know make about like what the knitter is going to know or need from a pattern. You know, we know some designers who focus on really straightforward instructions, and that's their priority because that's what's important to their knitter. You know, we are really focused on being relentless about things fitting really well. And so you're going to have a different expectation of one of our patterns. We're not going to write it with simplicity in mind. You know, we'll right. make it as straightforward as we can for the instructions, but like we would never sacrifice. We would never, given the choice, should this be easier to knit or should this fit better?
It's always fit. Yeah.
It's always going to be fit. It's going to be an extra, we're going to add an extra step there. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're thinking of beginning garment knitters when we create our patterns. We're trying to make sure that a first time garment knitter would be successful following one of our patterns, but we don't expect that new knitters are knitting our pattern unless they're like a very, shout out to Christina, who is like a very dedicated newer knitter doing some really yes. great work, but an average, like the first 5 years of my knitting life was really just knitting a lot of completely misshapen things and wondering what happened. So yeah, till I like learned about gauge and et cetera. Yeah.
And a first time garment knitter is not a first time knitter, right? That's a whole different
right.
step in a knitter's development. You know, and I think that there's so much more. I mean, one of the biggest ironies I think of my life is that I did not go to art school. I went to business school. Well, first I went for biology and then I was like, no, thank you. And then I was like, I'll do business. And I started off focusing in marketing, but I hated it. Well, okay. So like the business courses in the mid-aughts for marketing were like, oh, here's what Coca-Cola is doing and here's our supply chain. And I was just like, this is like the most dead on the inside BS I've ever heard.
Yeah. I mean, marketing has changed a lot since we were young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now I would say like so much of what I do is marketing. Like you, I also do some marketing freelance and some marketing coaching. And I think one of the things that was a surprise to me about my development journey is how much knowing, having a big marketing toolkit is important for reaching the people that you intend to reach. Mm-hmm. Not, and I'm not talking about like selling people things, right? Like I'm talking about how you move through the market, how you identify that person. So like Lisa, hi Lisa. Lisa's one of our members. Lisa asked me a question on Instagram today. Like, do you think about what the masses want or do you just kind of make what you want? And the answer is no. The answer is knowing exactly.
Neither.
Yes, neither, both. Like, yeah, I mean, I only create things that I'm excited about, but my number one priority is thinking about the Lisas and the Jens and the Christinas out there and what they're looking for, what they're searching for, what I see coming off their needles, and making sure that, you know, none of us is going to serve everyone. And the thick and quick market in sweaters is well served, right? So you and I are both really excited to be doing finer gauge garments and things that are not so available and doing them really well. And so, no, I don't care at all what the masses are doing. I care about what Jen and Jenny and Christina and Lisa, like.
Yeah. Jillian, Alyssa.
Yeah.
Hi.
I wouldn't want to leave anyone out, but like we're thinking of you guys.
Yeah. And I mean, it's
about the other people who engage with our content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have to be in love with a design. I have to be able to see myself wearing it or I'm not going to move forward with it because I don't want things that I don't want. But I also have to see y'all in my mind wanting to wear this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that's, I mean, Jen and I were bouncing ideas back and forth the other day and like, she reminded me like, well, but would you see Jillian wearing this? Do you see Christina wearing this? And then in my mind, the design just changed like a little bit based on what I feel like I could see on you.
Yeah.
People that crucible. We are getting to know. Huh?
They're the crucible. Y'all are the crucible. Like there's a step in the development where you say, is this going to be something that the people who are into my things are interested in?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then that's obviously shaped, but you know, the marketing piece is so important because we are shaped by our people. Our people are shaped by us back and forth. But if we're reaching the wrong audience right off the jump, one, they're not even going to tell you what they like and don't like. You know, you're reaching the wrong audience when, like, you ask a question and you're like, tell me in the comments. And then, like, no one says anything, which happens sometimes. But if that happens every time, like, then your people aren't there, you know?
Yeah, something's not connecting. Yeah.
Right. So having that group of people that likes what we like, that are interested in what we're interested in, then we can be informed by our community and trust that, like, this is right for our community, you know, and the aesthetics align as well a lot more easily. So then it's not hard for me to take my initial idea and filter it through that crucible, that step, and see what comes out the other side. It might be exactly as I started. It might have changed a little bit.
Yeah. I think another question that designers often get asked that we've never asked each other answered here would be, what comes first for you, like the yarn or the sketch or the concept, or where do you start? Mm-hmm. Right. So let's make it real. Yeah. We're about to start planning our spring collection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're about to start it, but we have half started it. I mean, for me, a lot of times the first thing is the yarn. But that isn't always true, because there are certain concepts that I want to execute, and then I want to figure out what yarn will be best to execute that concept.
Yeah, I think for the spring collection, you were in an art museum and you sent me some photos that were resonating, and you're like, I'm really mm-hmm. into this palette for spring 24.
Well, that's true. But then I don't know what the garment's going to look like until I know what yarn I'm going to work with.
Yeah.
Because I can't. And even... it is a struggle. It is still a struggle if you're working with a yarn you've never worked with before. And whether you're getting yarn support or purchasing, you know, sometimes we do both. And if you're doing that online and you haven't worked with that yarn before, then as much as we look for all of the things that help us, you know the properties of a yarn, sometimes you really don't know how that yarn knits until you knit with it. And so there have been a lot of times that I'm trying to, like, execute a concept, but it doesn't really fit the yarn properly. And I'll go back and rework the concept to make sure that it does work with that fabric that I'm actually able to create with that yarn, because of the fibers and the spin and the ply and the way it all ends up coming together.
Yeah. You know, for me, I think it feels like planning a party.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you're like, what is this party going to feel like? Is it going to feel like a birthday party? Is it going to feel like a family yeah. tradition thing? Like, what does this collection want us to feel like? And when you sent me those photos, it set the tone for the party, right? And then mm-hmm. you start pulling together your menu and your components and your ingredients and planning your wardrobe and thinking about your guest list, and it all has to come together.
Right.
At yeah. the same time, you know, you're not going to serve like turkey on the 4th of July.
Exactly. That's when everything starts getting tinkered back and forth and, like, just played with until it all makes sense together, which is, I suppose, the way that you plan a party. I'm not much of a party planning lady myself. I'm a party attendee.
Well, I'm sure there's an analogy in there too.
It's true, but it's like with anything, it's a recipe, especially the way that we work, because we work with collections. But even when I was designing more singular designs at a time, it was still pretty similar that I was coming up with the vibe or the place that that garment would fit in my wardrobe, and then tweaking it back and forth once I actually had yarn in hand and the sketch. Then does this really work the way that the sketch is initially drawn? Do I need to change anything, et cetera, right?
Yeah, for me, an early lesson was, don't send a pitch to a dyer without having worked with the yarn.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't come together the way that you think it will.
I mean, I will say that I think it might speak to people having some confidence in me that I send some pretty weak ideas to people because I don't want to commit if it's a yarn that I haven't worked with like, before.
Yes. Yes. A vague description and an evocation. Yes. But like I had a couple times where I was like, it will be like this and this will be the ease and this is going to be how it will fit. And then I was like, I need to deliver on something that is not mathing.
Right. I know. And it depends on the situation that you're in. I have changed things around with my collaborators, which is fine if you're communicating that early on in the process and making it clear along the way. But it isn't best practice to change things totally. I'd rather have the yarn and swatch. So at this point, I'm comfortable asking people like, hey, I'd love to do something with your yarn. Will you send me some to swatch with? I'm kind of thinking this. I'm kind of thinking this timeline, but I'd love to put together a proposal after experiencing this yarn. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Or go out and buy a skein if it's readily available, but it depends. Not everything, especially being in a warm weather climate, not everything that I want to work with that might be readily available in yarn stores, most places might not be available here for me to just grab.
You know what I'm realizing as we're talking? Like I told you this morning, I'm grumpy and I'm super stressed and I have been for weeks. And that's because I've been finishing things, wrapping things up, moving things along and working against impossible deadlines where I know that something is going to fail, but because nothing can afford to fail, like I'm just not allowing it to. And the thing that is breaking in the end is me.
Yeah, I'm doing that too. I'm just pretending like it doesn't matter.
Right? Like I can no longer turn my head, but I might meet all my deadlines.
Right. I pretended my way into finishing a sweater in like 3 days this week. So
yeah.
Yeah. It's not a sweater yet, but a lot more of a sweater than it has any right to be in 3 days.
Right? But I think what I'm coming to conclude here is that this week I need to somehow add one more thing to my to-do list, and that's creativity time.
Yes, I do. I know. The creative play time is often pushed aside. I have some swatching that I've been wanting to finish and then get into the sketching phase for like several weeks that I haven't been able to. But, you know, I think we should separate the way we're working right now from like the way that we would typically work, because we mentioned to you that we are overlapping many things, right? We've got chronic illness in both households in this design house. So we're not going to set ourselves up to be unable to put out work. And that is a situation that I ended up in last year. And that was really devastating for me on a lot of levels, not just financially, which obviously I didn't really make any money if I wasn't doing anything, but more in terms of like robbing me of my creative time and the thing that I love to do. And knitting someone else's pattern is not as satisfying as working on my own now that that's part of my hobby, right? That's become part of my thing, is making my own thing. And I would rather be working on my next idea because it's like the entire process now is the creative process for me, and I think for you too. So in order to accomplish the kind of buffer that we really need to feel secure, we're like tripling. I'm putting, you know, I'm editing a pattern for winter. I am finishing two more patterns for early spring and designing next spring kind of all at the same time. So that's unrealistic and not the way that we're going to always be working. But to a slightly lesser degree, it is the way that we're like always working though. Like we're always designing something, editing something, and knitting something else. Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do. I divide my calendar into rows. Like what am I designing? What am I sample knitting? What's in test and what's launching? Right. Like those are the rows on my work calendar. And yes, we are trying to get ahead. So we're doing a higher volume of work. But like, I think honestly, one of the things that's really tough for me in this job is budgeting and managing time. And like so often, like a really great thing comes up and then you try and squeeze it in. And it's not that I ever regret it, but it's just.
Yeah. Well, that's why I love my robot. I was failing miserably at time management. And I'm pretty good at time management. But obviously, many things in my life changed recently also, which means that my old systems were failing me. And then there's like an entire emotional component to not being able to make things happen in the time that you think that you're going to be able to. So then that becomes a whole other emotional aspect to it. When I started using this app to like arrange stuff for me, it just becomes way more clear to me if I have time to add anything in or not, because it's not just like what I put down on the paper and what I evaluate. It's like the app that I use is doing the calculation of like where these things are actually going to fit into my time.
Yeah.
And it starts telling me, like, it starts sending up red flags when things are not going to be fit into the time that I have to do them. Or on the converse, sometimes I open it and realize like I have so much blank space next week, but it's probably because I haven't added everything in. But it does mean that that's like a positive time where I can add in some new things or take on a little more, which feels good.
Yeah.
So
what's
organization.
Our ideas? Yeah. Yeah. And you yeah. And it's a practice, right? It's a moving target.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got our idea. We've got our yarn. We've got our swatch. We've got our gauge.
Mm-hmm.
Then what?
Then you open up Excel.
Open up Excel.
Which I did not know how to use when I started designing. Like, I could make a basic Excel sheet, but I really didn't know how to tell it to do calculations. If you are out there designing and you have not taken the time to learn to use Excel or any other kind of whatever, Google Sheets. I started with Google Sheets. I know Jen is.
I'm a purist.
Jen feels about Excel the way that I feel about Silk. We can all pretend that there are substitutes, but
there's no substitute.
But they're just not quite the same.
Some of y'all just really like hitting enter to scroll through your thing a million times. Anyway. Hater. Drinking the Google Sheets.
I don't like, I mean, listen, I'm in Excel now too, but I learned Google Sheets because it was like free and available to me, and I knew it was better than using Numbers when I was a Mac user.
I was talking to Julie Robinson this week, and she's like, Sheets, Google, whatever. I'm like, don't you dare. First of all, the $7 I pay a month to Microsoft will be the last subscription I ever get rid of. And I will get rid of my website before I get rid of Excel. So we're married, me and Excel. Don't tell my actual husband.
I love Excel now, too. I do. I have completely switched. It's fine. But point being, anyone out there who's not working with the spreadsheet, you know, you are doing yourself a great disservice by not investing that time into learning how to use spreadsheets better. And you should talk to Julie Robinson about that, which I think, I mean, she does a lot more than just teach you spreadsheets, but she does do that too, right?
Yeah, there's a component of that in her design lab.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what I thought. But yeah, I'd be spending time in Excel every single day. I never thought that would be my life. I really never even thought I'd be at a computer every day. So,
yeah, I think also like in my process, you know, my first step once I have the idea is to come up with a schematic, like a target schematic.
And yeah, I make the schematic when I'm swatching. It's like the same time frame.
Yeah, the sketch is the swatch is the, yeah, that whole step kind of happens together. And there's a lot of talk about grading being the way you move from your sample size to other sizes. But for me, mm-hmm. I don't grade. Like, I don't design one size and then grade it. I write all the sizes at once. Like, my grading and design process is a single process.
Yes, we both do that. I did, like, my first two designs not that way and realized that it is a lot less time to do it all at once. And it's a lot easier. And you will not get stuck having to try and figure out how to make something work that doesn't really work across all sizes.
Yeah, you won't get backed into a corner.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I try and write the whole pattern before I cast on. It doesn't always happen that way because of time management, but I try.
I used to do that. I don't know. No, I try and do that too. I haven't been able to do that with any of my current in-progress samples, which is why I'm saying it that way. But it is preferable to me. There are fewer mistakes that make it through to the final version, and it's a lot easier for me to like be that first tester. Even though we have a really great tech editor that we trust quite a bit. And, so I feel a little more confident working with her, getting something out, even if I haven't gone through that first written version of it. But still, the most confident I feel is when I'm able to get that pattern written and then start working from that.
Yeah. Yeah. Big agree. Mm-hmm. Big time. Yeah. And then I like to write in Word. So I put my initial pattern in Word because I don't want to lay it out until the final step because things change.
And it's easier to type and see what you're typing in Word than it is in like, the PDF publisher is a lot harder to like get in there and actually see what you're doing when you're making edits to text.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, this is making me think about all of the edits I have to do this afternoon.
I know. I got started on mine this morning. We both have testers that are waiting for patterns.
And edits that need to happen back and forth.
By the time you see this, you'll have it. So.
Yeah. Yep. My testers only just started swatching. So I know they are telling me they want it. But then at the same time, I'm like, okay, well. You have work to do first.
Swatches.
There's a lot of time is spent. And the way that I end up working, I mean, really all of these things are kind of happening at once. I'm in Excel. I grade a section. I mean, the whole schematic is written and any key design elements are figured out and placed. Then I start actually doing the stitch counts, translate those into the Word document, and then like that evening, knit that. So oftentimes I'm making the sample like piece by piece as I'm going through the pattern. And each section, once I've gotten it through those steps of grading, translating to stitches, translating to words, then I'll knit that area. So it depends on the moment, but I might be like, oh, I have to do all of this for the sleeves today so that I can knit my sleeves. Which is where I'm at. Right now I'm doing the grading, translating it into stitches, making progress charts, and then working directly from my progress chart, which I will say, if the progress chart is right, the pattern is right, in my opinion.
It's true. Yeah. If something gets messed up, that progress chart rules it all.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
That's the pattern, folks. Yeah. Oh, man. So there's another big piece that we are working on behind the scenes that we haven't talked on yet, which is this publication that we're creating, which is, I think I said I do a lot of writing. You also do a lot of content creation, but we're working on a publication that will be part of the Body of Work collection. It will also be called Body of Work. And I feel like this is our response to disposable marketing, right? So we're coming full circle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think our publication is a response to a lot of different things because we have sort of had this dream together of like, wouldn't it be cool if there were knitting magazines or knitting publications, which were really meant to inspire folks without being such a direct, like, now do it this way, right? So like a pattern book that doesn't have the patterns in it. That's just an opportunity for you to see knits and think about your own knitting and et cetera. And then also with really rich content that is also there to serve inspiration in different ways through the written pieces that we have and through, we've got like a tarot spread. So different invitations to engage with your creativity and engage with thought without it being like, you know, cast on these stitches now.
You know what makes me think of is like how culturally we've moved so far away from albums, right? Mm-hmm. Like an album is a cohesive thing. It's, you listen to it in order. There's like liner notes that, for you babies out there, the liner notes are the piece of paper that comes with hard media that contains music and often has lyrics or poetry or other things in it. So, you know, like there's liner notes, there's context. It's an experiment or experience, and it's kind of one thing altogether, which is how we've put this fall collection together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But I will say that I'm glad our next collection will not have the word work in the title because I think that we kind of did this to ourselves.
Yeah. We manifested all this work.
Yes. Body of work is taking on so many meanings for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's, well, yeah. I wrote a poem for the piece and it was a really different experience, right? Like writing poetry is not typically part of my experience as a knitwear designer or teacher. And our editor for that project is Christina McGrath and she's a friend of mine. And it was really, you know, as a designer, we get edited for style, consistency, accuracy, clarity, all those things. But to have a dear friend who knows me, who knew me professionally first and then knows me personally after that, helped me navigate writing a piece that is really kind of vulnerable and scary to share and to go through multiple iterations of that piece with me was just a, it was a beautiful piece of partnership. And, you know, there are a couple other contributors who have done written pieces that are going to be part of this. And, you know, I'm really excited to bring something that adds another layer and another invitation to this experience of making our own clothes.
Yeah, it has been a long time. I do a lot of writing, but I haven't had a chance to write a piece of art. And so I also wrote an artistic piece for this, in addition to another more practical piece. And it was really, I used to do a lot more artistic writing. I was lucky enough to have had like a regular gig that really supported my like creative writing and personal essays and things like that. So it has been a long time since I worked on something like that. It was a positive experience, but it was painful. It was a painful and difficult experience. It was very different creative process than the ones that I'm normally going through. So I was glad to go through that, but it definitely like, I was like really raw and beat up when I was doing that piece. So yeah, you'll see why when you read it.
Yeah. And so our plan for this publication that we are working on, so like next steps are layout and we'll include studio photography of the pieces. You know, we're working with a photographer who does some very beautiful things. Like we do like to show our knits. I think we both like to show our knits in our everyday life, in our homes, hanging out. But we do also like to, I like to give knitting the credit of being fine art by treating it to fine photography. In addition to my own. Now, you're somebody who's capable of doing your own fine photography. I don't feel like that's in my skill set. And so for me to do something more curated studio photography, right? Like in a space with professional help, with professional tools, for me gives my art form a little more, I don't know, fanciness. Like what's the word I'm reaching for here?
Formalism. You're elevating it. Elevating your work to be, you know, we work in fashion. If you are knitting garments, you're also in fashion. And if someone thinks of you, like, this is how much my stepdaughters love me. They tell people I'm a fashion designer. That's what they think of me, you know? So when you say you're a fashion designer, people think you're really cool. And when I tell like the obnoxious PA at my doctor's office that I am a knitwear designer, then they say like, oh, you mean like sweaters? And it's like, so not the same. So right. Not the same. If I said I was a fashion designer, they would think I was cool. I say I'm a knitwear designer and they're like, oh, so you like knit ugly sweaters a lot. And I'm like, who are you? Tell me. Right now, about being fashionable. Anyway, get out of here.
Right?
But then I'm not even going to take the time to be like, no, actually, I knit the like really sexy fine gauge stuff that I wear out on hot dates with my girlfriend, but whatever. So we are doing something that is not, you know, knitting ugly sweaters. And no one that is a fiber arts hobbyist, like that, it really gets to me the way that people who have no creative practice will be so happy talking down to you about yours. So I think that's like what you're getting at, is that as designers, it's funny because I, like, of course, I have a fine art background in photography, and my photography is higher level maybe than someone else's when they're just at home. But I don't have lights, and I don't even have a very good camera. So there is more that I can do, but I still do take time to plan really more elaborate shoots that take a long time, that require me to rearrange furniture and set up a space or find a space or whatever it is. And that's super important to me. And it's, I mean, I obviously have a passion for photography, or I wouldn't have gone into it in college, but it's exciting to me. And it's when I get to really see at that point, like, all of the fruits of my labor, which we were talking about. So I'm wearing Tory right now because I finally lengthened the armhole, and like, boy, howdy, does that feel better. Ah.
Good.
And Mary is here, and they're both waiting for their like fine photography shoot. And I normally would have already done that in this part of the process. So we were talking about that recently, how it doesn't feel like I'm finished. I haven't been able to feel as excited. Tori is going to be out in just like a couple of weeks. And it doesn't feel like it because I don't have the photography yet. So yeah. I'm really excited. We're going to be together next week doing that. And I'm really excited to be with you.
Yes.
But yes, that I feel the need to have a shoot which elevates the garment. And I promise y'all, it is that fine art photography shoot. It's not like when I wear clothes, I look better than average. I look just very average in the world, I think, and very average in a typical, here's a photo of you, you know, standing around with your kids. But in spending time on really having an elevated shoot where I'm posing, where my makeup is all of this, and I'm giving myself permission to edit for color and beauty and et cetera. Not that I have time to be like retouching my personal self, but in terms of lighting and shadows, it's, I think it's what knitting deserves. I think it's what all of that time deserves. Like, if you're going to take photos of your artwork, you go through a lot of trouble of like putting them in gallery lighting to have the appropriate, right? Because if you just take a picture of a painting on the floor, it doesn't look the same as it would. Right. It lessens that impact and the value of something. So
yeah. I agree. Well, and the last part, I think, of what we really have been spending our time doing is getting ready to connect with people, right? So tonight we're going to be at Lovely Yarns in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. If you're in the area, I think there's just one or two spots left now. So
yeah,
check their website and grab it if you want to come see us.
We don't know if there actually will be spots because there are only a few as we're recording this a week ahead. But if you happen to be up early on Wednesday when this podcast first airs, check their site, see if you can, give them a call and tell us if you're coming, everyone. We're excited for our second in-person event, but the connection that we're doing in person with folks is fun and a different aspect of our business. And I was going to say, I spend a lot of my time connecting in Slack. Our UX knits, our user knits, our user experience tests, they're really rewarding. Obviously, we get tons of information that way, and it informs the style that we write our patterns, the visuals, the light, everything. And sometimes I spend, you know, an hour plus every day for the whole week, just like answering questions in Slack, communicating. We're in a knit along, so we're doing knit along talking. And I really like that part of my work. I mean, usually, right, people are nice to us. And usually it's really rewarding to connect with them, even virtually. But it is also like there's definitely a significant amount of time that goes into answering emails, answering Slacks, answering questions, reaching out, responding, etc. And so there is like in no way should someone underestimate that. Like we aren't sitting around waiting for people to contact us. We're doing a lot of outreach. And we're also responding and inviting in those people that do reach out to us, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we want to know in the comments what questions you have about the process or about what we have going on behind the scenes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, did we share anything that surprised you?
Yeah.
Have any of y'all
designed, like, what was your biggest surprise?
Yeah. And any of y'all who are like part of our regular knit crew that are not designers, you know, have you ever thought about it? Or what, like, would you design? Do you want to design? Is there something that's stopping you? Or is it not part of your radar? Which is totally fine, by the way. If you really love knitting, you can just keep knitting.
Yeah. Yeah, I talked to a few people who were like, I just feel like I'm not a good enough knitter until I've designed something. It's like, those are two separate sports. Like, That's not the same thing. It's totally different. They're not, designing is not like the top rung on the knitting ladder.
No, you never have to knit, be a designer. You can also be like an amazing tester and not design something. And those are not the same skill either. So there's a lot of facets. And there are other things in this industry that people get really into, like tech editing or dyeing or whatever, right? Making project bags and stitch markers, etc. But when you make something your job, it's going to take away a lot from your hobby. And if your hobby is knitting, you can still expect to lose some of that knitting time, especially if you're new and you're working another full-time job. And trying to make a new full-time job happen.
Yeah. All right, y'all. Let's play the bum-bum.
Right. Let's wrap it up. That's okay. We're not going to have a bum. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I'm going to close with the bum-bum. Here it comes. Happy knitting, everybody.
Happy knitting.